Okay, let me say something about your family. What was your father doing before leaving Italy?
I actually don't know. I really don't know, and I think my brother may know.
Well, we will ask him.
Please ask him that question. You can just put a cross next to me because I don't know. I really don't know. Okay. I'm sorry.
So when they arrived, your brother and your sister were already born, yeah?
My brother was born.
You were the only one born.
Yes, but my father came first on his own.
Uh-huh.
He arrived here by himself. I mean, he left my mother and the two children in Italy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they came 3 years later.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so he stayed here to try and establish some form of understanding in the country. Yeah.
So what kind of memories you received from those first years before you were born? What were they telling you about Italy when you were a child?
Very poor.
Uh-huh.
12 children in the family, many children sleeping in the same room, living conditions very poor, economic conditions very poor. That was my perception of what he was saying. There was a reason to move out of Italy because it was so bad, no education, affordability virtually zero, and I believe my father had very little education. He left in grade 3 or left school at the age of 10 or something like that, 12 maybe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No more education, no money, no ability to do education, so he left to look for something better.
Okay.
It was very, very bad.
And first he left alone.
Yes.
And was he with, maybe your brother could know more about that, but was it alone or with someone, relatives or friends or from the same village? You don't know.
I don't know. My brother might know that.
Yeah.
I think my brother will have a better knowledge of the pre. Before I was born.
He was already 5.
He was born in 1929.
And your father?
My father arrived. Yeah, I think it was 1930.
So it was only 1 year?
Yeah, that's why my brother was about 3 or 4 years old when he came here. But he'll know better. I think that side of it you should really speak to him about, you know. Yes.
Okay, what memories do you have of your first years of your life?
Yes, the first years.
In Cape, yeah?
Yes, in Cape Town. Always in Cape Town. My father did work for the Salesian Institute. You know, the Salesians priests.
Yeah.
They had a farm out at in Claremont, which was out of the center of town, about 10 kilometers from the center of town. And he worked on the fields there.
Uh-huh.
That's all he could find, because my father's brother was a Salesian priest, so he was able to connect with the Salesians in Cape Town. And
but he's not here in Africa,
he came later in 1956. Came, you know, just to say to stay with the family. He died here as well, the priest.
Uh-huh.
But that's what my father was doing, and
working at a farm.
Yes, in the fields. He had no education. He had no profession. He had no job. No trade. He had nothing. No education. No trade.
What about your mother?
My mother came in a few years later, and I think the exact year my brother will be able to tell you.
Yeah.
But she was a lady that, in fact, also had very little education, but I think 1 year more than my father. But very little education, and also she just became a housewife. You know, that's all she did.
She's been a wife for all
her life. Housewife. She had no job. She did nothing. You know, it was very difficult.
Wealthy family even here in
We had a family called Rubi, R-U-B-B-I. They came from Arostica in Italy, and he was a building contractor. He became a very wealthy man in Cape Town, and then my father became the chauffeur. Then Mr. Rubi, after he left the Salesians, but my brother will tell you more about that, I'm not 100% sure. But he came and he worked for Mr. Rubi, Joseph Rubi, Giuseppe Rubi. And he was the main building contractor, one of the largest. He became one of the biggest building contractors in Cape Town. And then my father was a chauffeur for Mrs. Ruby, because Mrs. Ruby had a motor car and Mr. Ruby had a motor car. He had a Packard and she had an Oldsmobile. I'll never forget this. And he was the driver for Mrs. Ruby.
Okay.
And he did handyman work around the house. And she had a farm in Stellenbosch, which would be interesting to go and see it. It's a wonderful farm. He worked on the farm as well, and he worked for Mrs. Ruby and Mr. Ruby. That's how, and then they took us in and they looked after us, Ruby family. Yeah.
So you get help from this?
Yes, and they gave us accommodation and so on, you know. So we survived through the Rubies, basically. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
How was for a child of your
age? Yeah.
Will they grow in here in South Africa? I mean, there were no many Italians with it.
Very, very few Italians. In fact, it was very, very difficult for me as an Italian child at school, because if you recall that Italy was at war with America and England, and this was basically a British colony at that stage. It was a British country. So I actually was, it was difficult for me to suppress the Italian nationality. In fact, when I was at school, I tried to anglicize my name, you know, so Lorenzo became Lori, but it became Lori because I didn't want them to call me Lorenzo, because that was too Italian, you see, and we were actually fighting the war against the people that were here. So it was very, very difficult for the Italians, especially at school. The guys didn't like me. None of the other children, it was very antagonistic towards me, you know, and that there was a German chap at our school as well, and he was finished, you know, he had no chance, you know, it was quite difficult. Yeah,
because also in South Africa, where in some camps for prisoners, Italian prisoners.
Yes, I'm coming to that, because my father went into the concentration camp, and I've got all the papers here, everything of him. I just wanted to tell you.
So, did it happen maybe that the government, the British government, drove the Italians and the Germans into these camps?
I think the South Africans did that, because South Africans were on the same side as the British.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. So they fought together. In fact, the South Africans went to help the British fighting, and there are many South Africans that fought in Italy for the British. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an interesting time. In fact, one of my chaps up here, one of my employees up here, one of the senior quantity surveyors here, his father fought in Italy against the Italians and the Germans for the British, but as a South African he fought there, you know. So he will tell you a few things about what happened in the war, you know, during the First World War, Second World War.
You went through like a really hard times in that field.
It was difficult, extremely difficult. It was difficult from the war point of view, and also from the economic point of view. We didn't have anything, you know. What used to happen is we didn't have money to buy clothes. So there's a market, a very cheap market in the parade, not far from where you're staying now. My mother used to go and buy old stuff there that was broken or whatever, you buy it for next million. She'd pull the wool out of the jersey and then knit the socks or re-knit the jersey. You know, that's how we started. And to buy old material in the parade and to make the pants, because we couldn't go to the shop to buy the pants, it was too expensive, we didn't have the money, you see. So she had to make it, so she sewed everything. She made the jerseys, she knitted the jerseys, and she made the pants, you know, and the shirts as well, everything, you know. Yeah.
What school were you attending? Was it religious school?
It was a Catholic school, yes. The first school I went to was St. Mary's Convent, which was a girls and boys school, and then I went to the Marist Brothers College. I don't know if you know Marist Brothers. It's Champagne.
Are they Irish?
No, they are. They started with Champagne in France, French. I think it was 1918 they started it. And in fact, Mario Colucci is one of my cousins, and it might be worth interviewing his family as well, because he's now Marist Brother and he lives in the college at the moment. Yes, it would be worth.
So you are some cousins from the side of your father or your mother?
My father's side.
So a brother came here after?
It was a cousin of my father, two of them, Luigi and.
They came after the war?
They came before the war.
Uh-huh.
before the war.
So also that family
Yes, but they went first to Argentina, I think, and then from Argentina they came here.
That's
why I say you will meet them. You'll see them on Sunday.
Perfect.
It's Vittorio Colucci and Renato. They are the sons. And then the other family is Mario, who's the Maris brother. You know, he's a clergy.
Wow.
But he lives very close to me. I can take you to him, it's no problem, you know. He would be a very interesting person to speak to, yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow. So you had your school, you made it, you had a school in a Catholic church, the
Catholic school, yes.
But since, well, your family was not that wealthy, but gave you as a...
Yeah, that school, we didn't have to pay for that school. It was sponsored by the government, the junior school. And then when I went to the senior school, that we had to pay. So my father, but then it was later, you know, I first went to the senior school in 1950. So it was easier for them because at that time we were able to afford to pay for the school a little bit more because it was... 20 years after he was here.
So the economy was also improving
a little bit better, and he had got this permanent job with Ruby's, and then he got another job. He went to work at a dry cleaning factory, you know, as a supervisor. So he improved little by little.
Your brother and your sister were already working at that time?
I think my sister was working, yes, in 1950 my sister was working. My brother was... No, he started working as an apprentice, but he'll tell you all of that. He was an apprentice carpenter, you know, he started as an apprentice carpenter, yeah.
So, and
I was the only one of the three that went to the university.
Later on,
they had more opportunity, you see.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate my brother couldn't go to the university because he didn't have the opportunity, you know. But he will tell you all that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for you to go to the university,
yes.
I mean, maybe you were the only Italian even there.
I think you're right. There was in my class one other Italian, Torreschini. He also went to university, and his brother. There was at the University of Cape Town many students, 20,000 students. You know, it's a big university. But I think I would say less than a dozen Italians, I would suggest, you know, very, very few. Yeah.
Going back a little more to your childhood, I mean, what kind of memories you have you would have regarding the contacts with other races, I mean, the blacks and colored? Well, the situation you were living, and also the Italians coming here, they were facing a situation that were quite, in a way, peculiar for them, yeah?
Yes, there was. The government was very much the old government was the apartheid regime, you know, where in fact the black people had no opportunity. That was the separation government, okay? It formed in 1947.
So before of that, from what you can remember, the situation was a bit more relaxed or what?
A bit more relaxed, but always segregation, unofficial. Unofficial segregation.
And after that, officially.
Official segregation, yes. Wow. Yes, with the new government, the nationalists, they called themselves the nationalists, and they became segregation orientated, where they actually separated the blacks from the whites. It's a very strange history, a very difficult times from the point of view that if you went to the beach, there would be a sign to say whites only. You know, but the dogs were allowed on the beach, but not the blacks. It was, and if you had to go to the airport, the blacks were not allowed in the airport. You know, so very few black people travelled because they had no affordability to travel. So they used to put them at the back of the aeroplane. You know, in the last row, if there were four seats, you know, then the four blacks would be in the last row. That's how it used to be. See, it's a very strange, it's a very abnormal existence, but it's something we were, and the schools only watch, you know, black cinemas, watch only, you know.
You didn't have many chances to get in contact with blacks?
No, I knew no black people. Unlike my grandchildren now, they have black friends, you see, because it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
But at that stage, I didn't know any black people, because I never came in contact with them.
And your mother didn't have like a black woman helping her in the house?
No, it is too expensive. No, not affordability. You know.
Interviewing other later immigrants,
yes.
The ones that came in the 50s,
yes.
Most of them told me they were having in the 50s, in the 60s, a woman in the house. But in your case, it was a bit...
No, we couldn't afford it.
We couldn't afford it. So even that contact, you were...
No, it was impossible. I mean, my mother did everything, you know, the scrubbing of the floors, everything, you know. Yeah, no, no.
So
it was a strange, very difficult beginning, I can tell you.
But what I know, the Catholic Church wasn't always, has always been on a different, had a different idea on this. Yeah. So the church, the Catholic Church, is where, in a way, I don't know at that time, but already in the 50s and 60s, they were open to colored and blacks as well.
Catholic Church was always open. They never had a segregation, and the black people used to come to the church, but very, very few. There weren't many. Yeah, because you see, what happened was it was a geographical problem,
mm-hmm.
because the black people were not allowed to live. In fact, they were not even allowed to come into the white areas.
Uh-huh.
In fact, if the police saw the black person in a black area, they would stop him and put him into the van, take him straight to the police station, because he was not allowed to be, if he was walking in the main road, say he was walking in Tanya, into the van, police station, in the jail. Not allowed, you see. And there were permits, they had to get permits to live from, they came from the inn, from the Bantustan, from where they lived, the black people. They came to Cape Town, but they had to be moved out into various areas. When we came from the airport, on the left hand side, you saw all the shacks, very difficult to see at night, but you will see it within the next few days. That area was always designated for the blacks, and then they had what they call the Group Areas Act, alright, and certain areas were designated black or coloured, and others were designated white. Now the coloureds were in between, and they had strangely a better opportunity than the blacks. It was almost a colour, a regime which was governed by colour as opposed to anything else. And different shades of colour with different rules. You know.
Is it difficult for the government to decide which colour a person is?
Yes.
There are some
For instance, the Chinese were considered to be non-white at that time. The Chinese.
Yeah.
So that's why now there was a big do about 3 months ago where the Chinese are now deemed to be previously disadvantaged, you know, because they were designated as being non-white in the old regime. So it's an interesting situation.
There were Indians in Cape Town.
Indians were non-whites,
non-white.
You know. The coloureds were also non-whites, but not blacks.
So were a bit more...
A bit more, they had Indian schools, and the coloureds had coloured schools, you know.
Difficult to manage all this.
It was an impossible situation. It was an impossible situation, and the cinemas weren't allowed. Black people were not, even in the hotel. The black people were not allowed. You know, because they weren't allowed in the white areas. You know, and the policeman one night he picked up this chap and he put him in the vans. I was actually doing police reserve at the time, and did it sometime. And he said, why did you pick him up? He said he didn't like because he polished his head. You know, so he put him in the van. That's just an example, because he had a head, was shiny a little bit, the head, in the jail. Terrible.
So you were born in South Africa, so you got the South African citizenship,
yes,
yeah?
Yes,
but
yes.
You also kept Italian one or not?
Yes.
Okay, you're both.
Yes. I'm allowed to do that.
But you did your military service in South Africa? Or?
No, I was totally medically unfit.
Even if you were a sportsman?
No, because I came fit in the inter-schools cross-country, you know, the cross-country race the day before the test, you know, I was 30 kilometer race, you know, and I came number 5 in it. The next day I was totally medic. No,
it's
because I had flat feet, you see. But the flat feet made no difference. I played rugby, football, cricket, athletics, everything made no difference, you know, but I got out of the army. But when you examined me, I stood like that, you know, so my feet were flat, you know. Yeah, so I didn't do military service, no.
Talking about sport, you know, the British education system, which was the one that even here was given a lot of importance to sport,
tremendous importance.
So you come
especially
to sport.
In the schools, yes, very much so.
Or was it also football popular, or was it not at that time?
Not as popular as the rugby.
So you, what was your first sport? Like,
no, I played rugby.
You played that rugby
and soccer, same time. In fact, rugby in the morning, soccer in the afternoon, on the same day. You know, but my main sport was cricket.
Funny,
yes.
Main
sport. Yeah. But for Italians, that's very strange. You know.
I want to ask you about that because you were watching it.
Yeah.
No,
it's a very complicated game, and it's only invented by the British, and they brought it all to the colonies like India and places like that, Sri Lanka and Pakistan and Australia. But South Africa, cricket is a big game, you know. It's a big game.
So rugby and cricket are the most important
game.
Ones, yeah.
But now, soccer is predominantly played by the black people.
We saw that.
Yeah, it's played by the blacks. So. I don't want to be racialistic, but that's why they're so bad. I mean, the football team is terrible. I mean, it's rubbish, you know. It would, if you're not even playing in the British second division, you know, that's how bad it is, you know. But rugby is the main game for the
South Africa is the world champion.
Yes, yes.
You know,
it's the world's second time now, you know.
So, I was with an Italian kid playing cricket at that time.
Very strange.
Yeah.
And captain of the first team, you know, the cricket.
So you were playing?
Yeah, I played in the city good league. You know.
You enjoyed it more than soccer, right?
Yes, it was a more interesting game. Yeah. It was a fascinating game, and also being the captain is very difficult because if you don't understand the game, when you're captain, you have to dictate the whole game.
You're captain also.
Yes, but it's very complicated because you've got to place the field, you've got to change your bowlers. The captain in soccer doesn't make much difference. The captain in rugby, not so much. But in cricket, it's all the captain.
Like a coach, maybe?
It's the coach because you have to pick your bowlers, you have to put who's going to bowl when, you have to look at the wicket, you have to see what's going on, you have to place the fielders in the right positions. You have to change the field around. You change your bowler. The captain is a very important job. But in soccer and rugby, it's not. You know.
How old were you when you were nominated captain?
Captain at the first team at school. I was 16, I think.
Yeah, what did your father say about that?
He didn't know about that. Didn't know what it was. Never came to watch.
Ooh.
No, because he didn't understand cricket. You see, and all the mothers and the fathers came to watch the children playing in the second team, you see. But here I was captain of the first team, but my father never came to watch. Nor my mother didn't know what I was doing. And at the end of the day, the mother used to wash the pants, and she didn't understand why they had green marks on it from the field, you know. Didn't know why I was wearing the white pants, you know, for the cricket. strange for me, it was very strange, you know.
You feel like a bit
isolated, you know.
Yeah,
it's very strange. I mean, very strange.
But you got this big responsibility. I mean, is it that through sport you got like a more respect from the people? Was it possible?
Well, what sport does to you, especially when you're the captain, it gives you qualities of leadership, you know, and camaraderie. If you're a leader in your sport, I believe that you can become the managing director of a company or the you know, it gives you the leadership qualities especially if you become the captain of any team or sport. When you've got team sport, not the individual swimming, it's individual game, it's very difficult, or tennis is individual, golf is individual, but when you have a team sport, if you are involved in the team sport, it gives you the team spirit qualities which are stand you very good in your life afterwards, you know. It's very important.
I played football.
You were captain as well. Very nice. I can see that. Now I was captain of the Italian football team as well, you know, because you've got the leadership qualities and the people see it and they say, no, he's the captain. Well, I don't know why, but it happens like that. Same as you.